Now entering Nerdist.com.
Big Pop Fun. It's Big Love, Pop Art, and Fun Times from the Wilson World Studios in California, USA. It's Big Pop Fun. Here's Tom Wilson.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Big Pop Fun Podcast with Tom Wilson. I, oddly enough, am Tom Wilson. Imagine that. Me hosting a podcast with my name in the title. But here we are. Here we are. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for downloading the podcast. I'm glad you're listening. I've been thrilled with the reaction. I've been moved to tears from the postcards. All right, I'm not moved to tears from the postcards. Do I have a postcard here? Let me see. I have a postcard here from John. John from, I don't know, but he's a fan of Big Pop Fun, and he likes the solo ones. So, John, hey, you're in luck. He liked the Kill the Guy with the Ball in the Basement story. And, hey, John. Hello. He sent me a Maggie Simpson postcard, and I appreciate it very much, John. Was that vague enough for you, John? But hey, thanks for writing in. I appreciate it very much. It's been really neat getting postcards and emails from everybody, so I appreciate it. Here at the Big Pop Fun Factory in sunny California. That's not sunny right now, but actually cold and rainy. The clouds fill the sky, as they have for several days now. It's actually, I think, it's colder here right now than on the East Coast. So welcome back to Big Pop Fun. Welcome to this magical sleigh ride of enchantment and wonder as we realize it's Christmas time, as we rollick and frolic over the snow-covered trees of happy villages, rounding the large Christmas tree in the center of town. It's been named the holiday tree because, you know, well, we wouldn't want to hurt people's feelings by calling it what it actually is. So we round the holiday tree and we settle down to comfort and joy and peace on earth. And then we go home and log on to Facebook for a long session of sarcastic, snide commenting until we realize that, hey, we're part of the problem and perhaps should stop being a society of snide creeps. Big what was that? Hey, this Christmas and every Christmas, don't be a snide creep. That's bing. Oh, an angel just got its wings. My podcast today is brought to you by art, as it always is. Go, as you've heard, go and buy something. Go and look at an art show, one of those art festivals, one of those art in the park things. You can buy a tiny painting. It can go into your kitchen, your living room, somewhere. It's painted. It's made by a person. Buy yourself a leather guitar strap that was just carved by a leather smith. Do people do a lot of smithing still? I don't know. There were gunsmiths and leather. Weren't there? Anyway, go to a smith, anyone named Smith, and ask them to make you something with their own hands, and then buy it, because that's what it's all about. Support the arts. Buy art. In fact, I was just at the open studio of, I hope, a new friend. Eric Merrill is his name. A fine painter. Went to his house. Eric Merrill. You could check out his work at ericmerrill.com. ericmerrill.com. He's a wonderful painter, a colorist in the California Impressionist tradition, a member of the California Art Club. He's got very many, many fancy schmancy art credits. But the fact is, his paintings are beautiful and evocative, and they're really, really terrific. So he was having an open studio, so I went to his studio. It was very nice to meet him, meet his lovely wife Ramona, and to see all of these paintings, including several nocturnes of the California desert. Nocturne meaning it's a very dark painting, very dark blues, very dark purples. But it really, the painting looks like what the desert might look like at midnight under a full moon. That's very hard to do, to get those colors. And his colors are very impressionistic, but to get those colors and the color relationships really so wonderfully done that it's just a beautiful painting. Frederick Remington was a great, great painter of the West. And cowboy paintings, every painting that you've ever seen, maybe with a cowboy galloping on a horse, was probably done by Frederick Remington. And he was so disappointed in the way that he painted things at night that he stopped doing all other paintings and he just painted night scenes. He painted nocturnes for a long time, and I saw a show of that at the Amon Carter Museum there in Fort Worth. Just a nocturne show of his paintings. Unbelievable, the stagecoach coming across a hill under the moonlight. It was just it was amazing. Anyway, so Eric Merrill is a fine painter, and you should go to his website, and you should look him up in galleries, and you should enjoy his work, as I did for a while, until I went up to his house that is at an undisclosed location in Pasadena, California, a lovely, lovely part of the country. So I'm looking at his paintings. I go in the house, very welcoming, very warm. We're having a very nice talk about art, about his paintings. And in about a half an hour, I say, "Do you have a cat?" And that's what I do when people have put their cats into another room and my lungs are closing down for the winter. Yes, things were closing up and I was feeling wheezy and not good, and my throat and all kinds of wonderful medical shenanigans were going on. So do you have a cat? Well, yes, we have two. We put them outside or in a room or whatever. That guy, I have to leave. Congratulations on the paintings. Goodbye. And I was out of there. But I thank Eric for his beautiful paintings and his open studio. And I suggest that you try out ericmerrill.com. I don't know. It's weird to talk about paintings on a podcast, isn't it? Sorry about that. I'm actually having a painter, I think early January, mid-January. Brandon Bird is a great kind of it's pop, it's character driven, it's some of it's cartoony, but his paintings I found very interesting, and we're going to talk about his paintings, so that should be I hope it's interesting on a podcast to talk about art, and I try to explain what I mean when I'm talking about a painting, especially like a Nocturne of the Desert, where I don't know about you, but I just look at a lot of paintings. I like looking at them and I just say, man, that's cool. But it is – well, it's also – hey, can I tell you one more little plug, The Masked Man, my book on Amazon, on iTunes. Look it up in the iTunes store. Look it up on Amazon for the Kindle, for the Nook, The Masked Man, Tom Wilson, the author, all 5-star reviews. Would you give it a try? Would you do me a favor? I thank you very much, and I'm so grateful for the positive reactions that it's gotten. It's many stories of show business, of my life, and they're told to the actor Clayton Moore, the man who played the Lone Ranger and was quite marginalized in the character of the Lone Ranger in his life. And we talk about the nature, I think, of celebrity and his problems with it and my adventures with it. And people have really liked the book, so check that out. It is the Christmas podcast. It is the second annual Christmas special featuring the Gold Diggers, Dean Martin. Who was on my podcast? The virtual guests, I had John Denver as my virtual guest the last Christmas. This one, I don't. I haven't thought of anything to tell you except for, you know, stories of when I was a kid. As I've told you on the podcast before, ad nauseum probably, but my dad was raised in an orphanage during the Depression, and it's true. It's all of those almost Dickensian kind of a past that he had, but that is very true. And he would, when I was young, he really didn't tell us much about it. Dad's past was kind of clouded in mystery. Not that maybe he wouldn't have told us, but we just thought something, you know, very unusual went on, and he wouldn't really go there very much. But sometimes at Christmas, he would say, now when I was, when I was at St. John's, it was St. John's Orphanage in Philadelphia. When I was in St. John's, I once got a washcloth for Christmas. And one other time I got an apple. I think I got an apple and a piece of hard candy that Christmas. And we'd say, of course, great, Dad, can you, you know, help me with this Hot Wheels track? Get me one of those purple connector things because I'm making a loop-the-loop. So there was that. But since my dad was raised in an orphanage, near Christmas time, this orphanage – now orphanages have gone by the wayside. They're, I believe, non-existent now. There are various group homes, foster care programs, and things like that for people like that. But they I guess don't exist, or I don't know about them in the United States. But when I was very young, the orphanage was still there. I mean, it still had a lot of kids. Now maybe they called it something different, but I remember that near Christmas time, we would go to a dinner where all these kids who lived at St. John's would come to this dinner. And all of these men and women who had been at the orphanage, and many of them from the orphanage, the education was very good, and Catholic schools and everything, the education was good. So these people became, you know, doctors and lawyers and captains of industry and everything. But they would come back to the orphanage to give these children a party. And they would have a Christmas tree up, and all of the presents were up, and they had stockings. Now, this would be in the middle of December, maybe the teens of December, when they would have this Christmas party. And the thing that absolutely enraged me were these kids at the orphanage got to open their gifts on, like, December 16th. They just, you know, we'd have this party, and we'd have party food, and we'd have our little plates of the Christmas cookies with that little cherry thing, the you know, that little cookie with the kind of candy cherry thing right in the top of it. We'd eat a few of those. But let's face it, after two of those, you're pretty much done with that cherry in the top cookie. They weren't that great. But, you know, they were okay. So we'd have a couple of those. And then at the orphanage place, the air would be full of ripping wrapping paper. And this kid gets a cap gun. And this kid gets a Frisbee. And this kid gets Hot Wheels himself. And I was like, oh, lucky. That was unbelievable. They got stockings. And I just thought, wow, orphans are so lucky. They get the stocking. They get toys before everybody. They get to open. And I was, you know, kind of angry about it. And angry enough to tell my dad, like, why do they get to open the stuff? He said, well, yes, Tom, but they don't have a family or a mom and dad maybe to take care of them. And I was told completely, yeah, but hey, Dad, there's family, there's parental love, and there's Hot Wheels, okay? Let's get our priorities straight. So there was that. So we would give them toys and everything, and I had to go up and, you know, help them open their toys and just go, wow, that's great. Hey, nice Hot Wheels. I hope I get that, you know, like a week and a half from now. But that was my experience with the orphanage. My dad's experience was quite different from my experience at the orphanage. My dad's experience was to get education and care in lieu of parental care. My experience with the orphanage was just resentment at not getting toys. But Father Joe was a classmate of my dad's at the orphanage. Father Joe would be around at that party. Father Joe, no, this isn't there are a lot of Father Joes out there, and it's Christmas time, so please give a little bit of respect to your local clergyman or woman. But Tony Hendra, the writer, he had written, I believe, on Saturday Night Live, many, many different places, a comedy writer. Well, it's worth getting. It's a book called Father Joe by Tony Hendra, H-E-N-D-R-A. I like the book a lot, and it's about a Father Joe that Tony Hendra knew that was instrumental, that was a touchstone in his life. But this Father Joe was just crazy. My dad's classmate at the orphanage, Father Joe. I mean, they both, Father Joe and my dad, have passed on to their final reward in heaven, and probably most of the rest of the boys at St. John's Orphanage. But I'll tell you, my Father Joe, God rest his soul, was nuts. I mean, he was nuts. Everybody said so. I mean, nobody, not even talking about priests, but no human being I've ever known caused more eyeball rolls, shoulder shrugs, exasperated sighs, more or faster than Father Joe. I'll try to. Father Joe was like a wandering nomad. He was a priest. He was a Catholic priest, but he was a wandering nomad. And you know, when I think about it, I'm not sure if he actually lived anywhere. I don't know where his real home was. He seemed sort of homeless, or rather, he had a lot of homes because he traveled from house to house to house across Pennsylvania and New Jersey, and I suppose Delaware. He would sleep on sofas of people's houses that he knew. Old classmates from the orphanage, and he'd be up at all hours of the night blessing children and eating late night meals that, you know, he would either piece together himself or, you know, generally in that age, it would be thrown together by some poor lady, some harried housewife, you know, shaking her head in frustration. What the? Father Joe's here? Throwing on a bathrobe and making him a piece of toast and some eggs, and then sitting down in the living room and listening to Father Joe talk and talk and talk. I mean, he would just appear out of thin air. He just wouldn't be there for weeks or months. And then you'd come home one night, 10:30 at night. Oh, Father Joe's here. He'd appear out of thin air, sleep on the sofa, maybe a day, maybe a couple days, and then disappear again off to the next house without any warning. He'd show up at any hour of the day. He had some beat up sedan, like a brown Reliant K car or something. It was just full of papers and boxes and legal pads, scribbled notes with phone numbers and addresses on them, and, you know, just styrofoam coffee cups and maybe a jacket in winter. And he had one of those Irish hats. He had like a Tam O'Shanter thing. Joe Turner. Well, when Father Joe slept on the sofa at our house, you had to be careful. Because a part of his – he was in an order. He was not a – for you guys who don't know, you can – and I don't even know perfectly. Believe me. I have no clue about this stuff. But you could be a diocesan priest, which is the guy, the priest at your local parish, at a city. And he's a part of that city's diocese, and he works in a church. And then there are priests that are part of an order. You've heard of that, maybe Jesuits or Dominicans. And they're kind of – I mean, they have bosses and stuff, and they work within churches, but they're – a lot of those guys are a little bit more free agents. So he was – his order had them – I mean, as a part of your agreement to be the priest and your vows, you vowed – to celebrate a mass every day, a Catholic mass, even alone. And he celebrated mass every day, wherever he was, at our house. Often he just made it under the wire, like 11:30, 11:45 at night. He's starting to say this mass. So the secret rule with us kids was, don't walk through the living room after 11 o'clock because Father Joe will catch you and make you pray a mass with him. So going to the kitchen for one last cookie, I got caught a lot of times, plenty of times. He'd have, a priest like that will have a small mass kit, and it's got a chalice in it and all the little things that he would put together for the mass. So he would have his mass kit opened out in front of him, praying in the dim light when the house was still and everyone was sleeping. Now, I'll admit to you, and it's in my book, I was as spiritually minded a teenager as anybody. I was in youth group. I did all that stuff. But the last thing you want when you're trolling for, you know, an extra donut in the kitchen is to start a mass with a crazy priest at 11:45 at night. You know, but many times I was an altar boy sitting on an ottoman in my pajamas. So... but Father Joe was always in trouble. He never seemed to be out of trouble. So he came to stay at our house, as I said, sleep on the sofa, celebrate mass, and drive us crazy, and talk to my dad a lot. My dad was a lawyer, so he would help him with legal cases and things. They were classmates at the orphanage, and Father Joe often wanted to, you know, sue congressmen or sue the United States government, sue the army, because he had been in the army. in order to avoid getting in more trouble than he already was. But he got in trouble. I mean, Father Joe got in a fight with a cop once. I mean, he really did. And didn't shy away from some name calling if names were called for. And I told you he was in the Army. He was a chaplain in Vietnam for quite a while. He got in trouble. He got in a lot of trouble with the Army for stealing a Jeep when he was a chaplain there. He had to get in the battle zone. Some men were dying, and he was there to help them and to give them last rites and to be there with them. And to give these guys the Eucharist and everything. So he hopped in an empty Jeep. And some general's aide, runs out of a tent or a hut or whatever. You can't take this Jeep. This is the general's Jeep, and it's taking him a fish that he's having for dinner. This is the Jeep that's delivering the general's fish for dinner. And Father Joe stole the Jeep and yelled out, tell the general he can shove his fish. And he drove away. Apparently, they frown on that kind of thing in the Army during a war. But that was pretty cool. I mean, he had a strong handshake. He could put you in a headlock. He called people he disagreed with strongly jackasses. He fought a cop. He stole a Jeep. He told the general to shove it. Look, that is a priestly example that boys pay close attention to. We love the guy. We love the guy. I mean, but he'd drive you crazy. He was mad and scattered and seemingly homeless, like I said, like a Christian jester of sorts, a man of God who inspired the gnashing of teeth and ripping out of hair. He was impossible to pin down. You never knew what he would do or say. But he was nuts until it mattered. That's what I'm trying to say. Until it mattered. He was scattered until it mattered. Father Joe, this crazy guy, was in Vietnam as Saigon was falling. Yeah, crazy priest in a country coming unglued. The streets filled with panic. You've seen the pictures on TV, the throwing the helicopter into the water and the people just climbing the fence to get near the U.S. Embassy. And panic and fear and the shadow of the angel of death just walking among them, screaming. The frightened crowds crushed against those bending gates. And it was clear to everyone, Vietnamese, American, everyone, to get out of there. However you could, by helicopter, boat, plane, foot, get out of there. Well, Father Joe was in country. He was an army chaplain. He was far from Saigon. So as the country was falling, he put on a beret and carried a forged French passport in case he was stopped by the North Vietnamese. So he's speeding across the country as it's falling to Saigon, trying to get on a plane home. He was driving a rusted VW bus, just chugging along, bouncing across rutted fields of mud, stopping at tiny thatch-covered convents. Now, the sisters who lived there were women, many Vietnamese women marching to their own, valley of the shadow of death. They rushed to Father Joe's bus with gratefulness to God and something for him to take home with him. Orphans. They gave him children as he was driving across the country. They said, take them with you. You have to take these kids with you. They'll be killed. They'll be killed as soon as we're taken over by the North Vietnamese. Please. They pleaded with him. He was a boy from St. John's Orphanage, raised by Sisters of St. Joseph. He slept in a room with my dad and 600 other boys without parents to care for them. Those sisters, they fed him, they sheltered him, they raised him, they sent him to the seminary to give his life to the service of the gospel and God's people. So guess what? He didn't know what he was going to do, but he put the kids in the car. Yeah. He was unsure of what would happen, what he was going to do, what would happen to any of them. I mean, he hid the children under blankets in this VW van and drove across the country to get out. And when he'd stop at the next place, the next group of sisters saw the kids in the back of the van. They gave him more children and more until he was driving a bus packed with crying orphans across a Vietnam coming apart at the seams. It was a teeming city. Saigon was falling, like I said. He didn't do a lot of turning the other cheek, all right? He came into town, Saigon, with a bus full of kids having no idea. They didn't have papers and anything. Well, he railed and he begged and he threatened and he probably even called people jackass a lot enough times that he got every single one of the children exit papers, got them on choppers, planes, got them to the United States to adoptive parents, and for the rest of the years of his life, sent what little money he could help with the bills for those kids. Yep. And guess what? He didn't molest any of them. How about that? What? A priest that actually helped kids? Helped orphans in Vietnam as the country was falling? And then paid for them for the rest of their lives in whatever way he could? Yeah. Yeah, he came back from Vietnam to Philadelphia to sleep on people's couches. And make trouble and celebrate late night masses on hassocks and wear out more than a few welcomes from people who were hassled too much by it. But Father Joe was nuts, all right? Everybody said so. He drove people crazy and he got in a lot of trouble. He wasn't even close to some perfect image of a saint or what you're supposed to act like, or the beautifully painted, painting of saints with rosy cheeks and tranquil eyes filled with peace, or peace on earth, or any of that, holding a palm frond with a nice supple robe on some holy painting. No, there wasn't much about him that was saintly at all until it mattered. So, hey, this Christmas, thank God for Father Joe. Thanks for all the people out there. And I'm not meaning that him singularly. But we all know that bad stuff's happening out there. And we're still reacting to a terrible tragedy that's taken place. But there's so many people out there that would give everything to help kids. To help people, to help cities, to help you. That's what I'm going to be thinking about this Christmas. And I hope you are too. I thank you for listening this year to my podcast. I'm going to skip next week because everyone's just crazy and everyone's tired and everyone's taking off work. So, the podcast download numbers go way down right around the turn of the year because everybody's so busy. So I'm going to take a break next week. But I do, I wish you a very Merry Christmas. I wish you a very Happy New Year. Oh, I'll be back, I think, within the new year with a bunch of new guests. But thanks for listening to my stories. I appreciate it a lot. I found this quotation from Flannery O'Connor, the novelist, and I really like it, and I wanted to read it to you. She says, and I quote, "There's a certain embarrassment about being a storyteller in these times when stories are considered not quite as satisfying as statements, and statements not quite as satisfying as statistics. But in the long run, a people is known not by its statements or statistics, but by the stories it tells." Thanks for listening to my stories. Oh, I've got more. We'll be right back.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.